So we're continuing our 24-hour marathon of hearing and chanting about the pastimes and name of Krishna and descriptions of his form, because Krishna has an eternal form. Some have imagined through speculation that God is impersonal or formless. But speculation is useless when it comes to understanding Krishna, because he's known as Ashamurdva. Means, Urdva means no one is above, and Asa means Asasamurdva. Samurdva, Sama means no one's equal. No one's equal to, and also no one's above the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everyone's lower. Therefore, in the hierarchy of understanding, one cannot reach up and understand Krishna with one's intellect. However, if Krishna decides, he can reveal himself to the devotees. Therefore, those who are seriously desirous of understanding the nature of the Absolute Truth have dedicated themselves to a lifetime of submissive hearing. Because, as according to our Acharya, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the only process for properly understanding Krishna is through this process of submissive hearing. One needn't change one's position in life. It's not necessary to externally adjust anything, only to internally adjust. And therefore, Lord Brahma has prayed in his prayers to Lord Krishna, Jnane prayasam udapasyanamanta eva jivanti sanmukharitam bhavadiyavartam stane stita shrutigatam tanuvan manobhir ye prayaso jita jito pyasi taistrilokyam. One should give up only the process of trying to understand God through the intellect. What is the solution? One should live in the association of pure devotees, those dedicated to serving Krishna with no motivation, and hear from them, from the authorized scriptures and descriptions of Krishna coming down through the Shastra, through disciplic succession. And by that process, one's heart will be transformed so that one can actually conquer the unconquerable through loving devotional service, because it's the only thing that attracts Krishna. So our process is to arrange our lives so that we can go on hearing about Krishna continually. Tannama rupa charitari sukirtananu smrityo krameena rasanamanasi niyoja tishtan raje tananu ragi jananu gami kalam nayad akilamitu padesha saram. In fact, the essence of all advice given by our acharya Rupa Goswami is that one should arrange one's life so that one can utilize one's full time to remember the Lord, to hear about his pastimes, engage in his service, and eventually become situated in the Lord's transcendental dham, following in the footsteps of his associates. So, following that process, we're hearing tonight, we'll go on for the next 2 hours constantly hearing and discussing the topic of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because if we do that, then we're, to use a common metaphor, watering the root of the tree. Yomam eva masamudo janati purushottamam sarvavid bhajatimam sarvabhavena bharata. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, one who understands me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes the knower of everything. So someone might say, oh, why do you limit yourself? Why don't you study all kinds of different things? Why don't you study from all kinds of different books, philosophers, schools of thought, etc.? Why be so limited? Well, you could look at it like that, or you could see that by going deeply within one discipline, I mean, how much does it take to actually go deeply to scratch the surface of any discipline? It takes quite a bit. So to go deeply within the discipline of bhakti, one can go deeply within the Srimad Bhagavatam and within the Bhagavad Gita. And there, according to Krishna, one will find everything by going deeply within the Bhagavad Gita, within the Srimad Bhagavatam, because there resides Krishna. Krishne swadamo pagate dharma ganadi bisaha kalo nashta drishamesha purar narko donodita. In fact, Krishna has incarnated in the form of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and he's also in the form of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita. He is famous as a cowherd boy, and the Bhagavad Gita is just like a calf. And Krishna, as the cowherd boy, is milking the calf of Bhagavad Gita, and he's giving the milk to Arjuna and to anyone else in the entire universe who's hungry to drink from this transcendental milk of spiritual knowledge. So tonight we'll hear by hearing from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, given to us in this very palatable form, speaking of milk, the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is not on your rack. I have the only copy in the room, I think. I'm sorry. Srila Prabhupada made this before he made the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, just so that we'd have access to it, because he wasn't sure how long he would live and how much time he had to translate all of the Srimad Bhagavatam. As it turned out, he was only able to translate up to the 13th chapter of the 10th canto, quite a feat since he started quite late in life and only had a short amount of time, and at the same time had to manage an international society with no internet or any kind of Skype or computers or anything like that. Quite a feat. And so we have the Srimad Bhagavatam 10th canto. Normally one would start with the first canto, go all the way up to the 10th canto, and we're doing that. But at the same time, this book is written in such a way that anyone can read the 10th canto and not become waylaid in their spiritual life by jumping ahead, because it's integrated with the commentary of that Srila Prabhupada has given from various scriptures to give us a balanced understanding of Krishna and his pastimes in Vrindavan. Janma karma chame divyam evam yo viti tattvata takvadeham punar janma naitimamiti sorjana. Would you like to hear how the demon Pralambasura was killed? You want to hear how a great demon was killed in Vrindavan? Anybody objecting? Okay. Here's how it happened, according to the Shastra. Chapter 18, Killing the Demon Pralambasura. After extinguishing the devastating fire, Krishna, surrounded by his relatives, friends, cows, calves, and bulls, and glorified by their singing, again entered Vrindavan, which is always full of cows. While Krishna and Balaram were enjoying life in Vrindavan, in the midst of the cowherd boys and girls, the season gradually changed to summer. The summer season in India is not very much welcomed because of the excessive heat, but in Vrindavan, everyone was pleased because summer there appeared just like spring. This was possible only because Lord Krishna and Balaram, who are the controllers even of Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, were residing there. In Vrindavan, there are many falls which are always pouring water, and the sound is so sweet that it covers the sound of the crickets. And because water flows all over, the forest always looks very green and beautiful. The inhabitants of Vrindavan were never disturbed by the scorching heat of the sun or the high summer temperatures. The lakes of Vrindavan are surrounded by green grasses, and various kinds of lotus flowers bloom there, such as the Kulhar Kanjotpal. And the air blowing in Vrindavan carries the aromatic pollen of those lotus flowers. When the particles of water from the waves of the Jamuna, the lakes and the waterfalls, touched the bodies of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they automatically felt a cooling effect. Therefore, they were practically undisturbed by the summer season. Vrindavan is such a nice place. Flowers are always blooming, and there are even various kinds of decorated deer. Birds are chirping, peacocks are crowing and dancing, and bees are humming. The cuckoos there sing nicely in five kinds of tunes. Krishna, the reservoir of pleasure, blowing his flute, accompanied by his elder brother Balaram and other cowherd boys and cows, entered the beautiful forest of Vrindavan to enjoy the atmosphere. They walked into the midst of newly grown leaves of trees whose flowers resembled peacock feathers. They were garlanded by those flowers and decorated with saffron chalk. Sometimes they were dancing and singing, and sometimes wrestling with one another. While Krishna danced, some of the cowherd boys sang, and others played on flutes. Some bugled on buffalo horns or clapped their hands, praising Krishna. "Dear brother, you are dancing very nicely." Actually, all these boys were demigods descended from higher planets to assist Krishna in his pastimes. The demigods, garbed in the dress of the cowherd boys, were encouraging Krishna in his dancing, just as one artist encourages another with praise. Up to that time, neither Balaram nor Krishna had undergone the hair-cutting ceremony. Therefore, their hair was clustered like crow's feathers. They were always playing hide-and-seek with their boyfriends, or jumping or fighting with one another. Sometimes, while his friends were chanting and dancing, Krishna would praise them, "My dear friends, you are dancing and singing very nicely." The boys played at catching ball with bell-shaped fruits and round amalaki. They played blind man's bluff, challenging and touching one another. Sometimes they imitated the forest deer and various kinds of birds. They joked with one another by imitating croaking frogs, and they enjoyed swinging underneath the trees. Sometimes they would play like a king and his subjects among themselves. In this way, Balaram and Krishna, along with their friends, played all kinds of sports and enjoyed the soothing atmosphere of Vrindavan, full of rivers, lakes, rivulets, fine trees, and excellent fruits and flowers. Once, while they were there, engaged in their transcendental pastimes, a great demon of the name Pralambasura entered their company, desiring to kidnap both Balaram and Krishna. Although Krishna was playing the part of a cowherd boy, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he could understand everything, past, present, and future. So when Pralambasura entered their company, Krishna began to think how to kill the demon, but externally he received him as a friend. "Oh, my dear friend," he said, "it is good that you have come to take part in our pastimes." Krishna then called all his friends and ordered them, "Now we shall play in pairs. We shall challenge one another in pairs." With this proposal, all the boys assembled together. Some of them took the side of Krishna and some of them took the side of Balaram, and they arranged to play in duel. The defeated members in duel fighting had to carry the victorious members on their backs. They began playing and at the same time tended the cows, and they proceeded through the Bandiravan forest. The party of Balaram, accompanied by Sridham and Rishabha, came out victorious, and Krishna's party had to carry them on their backs through the Bandiravan forest. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, being defeated, had to carry Sridhama on his back, and Bhadrasena carried Rishabha. Imitating their play, Pralambasura, who appeared there as a cowherd boy, carried Balaram in his back. Pralambasura was the greatest of the demons, and he had calculated that Krishna was the most powerful of the cowherd boys. In order to avoid the company of Krishna, Pralambasura carried Balaram far away. The demon was undoubtedly very strong and powerful, but he began to feel the burden, and thus he assumed his real form. When he appeared in his real feature, he was decorated with a golden helmet and earrings and looked just like a cloud with lightning carrying the moon. Balaram observed the demon's body expanding up to the limits of the clouds, his eyes dazzling like blazing fire and his mouth flashing with sharpened teeth. At first, Balaram was surprised by the demon's appearance and he began to wonder, "How is it that all of a sudden this carrier has changed in every way?" But with a clear mind, he could quickly understand that he was being carried away from his friends by a demon who intended to kill him. Immediately, he struck the head of the demon with his strong fist, just as the king of the heavenly planets strikes a mountain with his thunderbolt. Being stricken by the fist of Balaram, the demon fell down dead, just like a snake with a smashed head, and blood poured from his mouth. When the demon fell, he made a tremendous sound, and it sounded as if a great hill were falling upon being struck by the thunderbolt of King Indra. All the boys then rushed to the spot. Being astonished by the ghastly scene, they began to praise Balaram with the words, "Well done, well done." all of them then began to embrace Balaram with great affection, thinking that he had returned from death, and they offered their blessings and congratulations. All the demigods and the heavenly planets became very satisfied and showered flowers on the transcendental body of Balaram, and they also offered their blessings and congratulations for his having killed the great demon, Pralambasura. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 18th chapter of Krishna, killing the demon Pralambasura. So, a couple of things. One is that it's mentioned here, although Krishna was playing the part of a cowherd boy, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he could understand everything, past, present, and future. So my question to you is, which verse in the Bhagavad Gita says that Krishna can understand everything, past, present, and future? Very good.
Vedaham samatetane vartamanani charjana bhavishyani cha bhutani mamta vedana kashchana.
Let's give Ramaswamy a hand for that one. And the verse number? What chapter?
That's in 15th chapter, I think.
7th chapter.
Oh, 7th chapter, okay.
You know the verse number? Well, it's nice you know the verse. Okay, so it's in the 7th chapter. And the verse number is 26 on page 358. Vedaham samatitani vartamanani charjuna bhavishyani cha bhutani mamtu vedana kashchana. Let's chant it together. Vedaham samatitani vartamanani charjuna bhavishyani cha bhutani mamtu vedana kashchana. Translation, O Arjuna, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I know everything that has happened in the past, all that is happening in the present, and all things that are yet to come. I also know all living entities, but me, no one knows. Would you like to hear the purport? Yeah? Here the question of personality and impersonality is clearly stated. If Krishna, the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, were Maya, material, as the impersonalists consider him to be, then like the living entity, he would change his body and forget everything about his past life. Anyone with a material body cannot remember his past life, nor can he foretell his future life, nor can he predict the outcome of his present life. Therefore, he cannot know what is happening in the past, present, and future. Unless one is liberated from material contamination, he cannot know past, present, and future. Unlike the ordinary human being, Lord Krishna clearly says that he completely knows what happened in the past, what is happening in the present, and what will happen in the future. In the 4th chapter, we have seen that Lord Krishna remembers instructing Vivaswan, the sun god, millions of years ago. Krishna knows every living entity because he is situated in every living being's heart as the supersoul. But despite his presence in every living entity as the supersoul and his presence as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the less intelligent, even if able to recognize to realize the impersonal Brahman, cannot realize Sri Krishna, the Supreme Person. Certainly, the transcendental body of Sri Krishna is not perishable. He is just like the sun, and Maya is like a cloud. In the material world, we can see that there is sun and that there are clouds and different stars and planets. The clouds may cover all these in the sky temporarily, but this covering is only apparent to our limited vision. The sun, moon, and stars are not actually covered. Similarly, Maya cannot cover the Supreme Lord. By his internal potency, he is not manifest to the less intelligent class of men. As it is stated in the third verse of this chapter, out of millions and millions of men, some try to become perfect in this human form of life, and out of thousands and thousands of such perfected men, hardly one can understand what Lord Krishna is. Even if one is perfected by realization of impersonal Brahman or localized Paramatma, he cannot possibly understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, without being in Krishna consciousness. So there's an analogy in this purport about Krishna that's related to nature. So what is the analogy? Krishna is like the blank, and Maya is like the blank. Okay, use the microphone though.
The analogy is that Krishna is like the sun and Maya is like the cloud which is covering the sun. So to an ordinary person, it may appear, for example, that the sun doesn't exist when it is overcast or clouded. Being of limited knowledge or realization, he may conclude that there is not the sun. On the other hand, the fact is that the sun, the moon, and the stars are existing despite these coverings. And anybody in a different part of the world can tell you that they can see the sun where there are no clouds. Similarly, Krishna exists, but that there is a material covering that prevents him from being seen by ordinary persons who are not pure enough and not yet realized to see him. But those who have attained self-realization will tell you that Krishna exists.
Thank you very much. Who can extend that metaphor? Say anything more about the example between the Krishna being the sun and Maya being like cloud or fog? Anything more you can say about that? One thing is, where does the cloud come from? It's created by the sun, right? So without the sun, the sun actually evaporates the water and then it makes the cloud. So although it appears that the cloud is covering the sun, actually it's not true. It's only covering our vision, and that cloud is created by the sun. So similarly, Maya is not more powerful than Krishna. Krishna creates Maya. How about some shastra of how one becomes free from or gets clear vision, even if one's covered by the cloud of Maya, which is like fog? Does anybody know a verse like that from the Srimad Bhagavatam, sixth canto, which is in the Shloka book? I do. There's a verse which was spoken by Shukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit, which you'll find in your Shloka book. Kechit kevalaya bhaktya narayana parayana agam dunvandi kartsneena nihara iva bhaskara. So Vasudeva parayana, thank you. Kechit kevalaya bhaktya. This verse was spoken by Shukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit, and he said that only a rare person who is taken to unalloyed pure devotional service, Vasudeva Parayana, means his entire life is dedicated to Vasudeva, can become, to such a person, the fog of material life, which is like Maya's like fog, Nihara Iva Bhaskara, it's burned off, just like the sun burns off a thick fog very easily. So similarly, to such a person, Krishna can burn off the fog of Maya so that one can see and understand it very clearly. Kechit kevalaya bhakta vasudeva parayana agam dunvanti kartsneena. It refers to that we become covered by Maya, and that means also that there are many kinds of implications due to our association with Maya, which is constituted of three qualities: goodness, passion, and ignorance. And committing sinful activities means we become implicated in more sinful activities, and it becomes very complicated. There are many descriptions of the varieties of sins which one accumulates in material life: pataka, atipataka, mahapataka. There are sins which are in seedling form. There are seeds which are sprouting. There are seeds which are fully manifest. And all of these, anyone who knows, who gardens, can we make sure that they get prasadam for them? And maybe you can give him your email. He'll put you on the mailing list also, so you know when programs are. Thank you for coming. Nice to meet you. Hare Krishna. Anyone who has gardened before knows how many seeds and how complicated it is. When the seeds start to spread, it's hard to stop them. There's a cycle that goes on and on. So Shukadeva Goswami said, sometimes through remedial activities, remedial measures, like prayaschitta, one can temporarily remedy sinful reactions. But it's just like burning the tops of the grass, and it looks like it's dead, but when the next rain comes, the grass pops up again, comes back. But when full Krishna consciousness is manifested, actually, even before full Krishna consciousness is manifested, there is even the reflection, even the dim reflection of pure Krishna consciousness, according to Jiva Goswami, will destroy all of the future sinful activities which have been stored in seedling form since time immemorial, and the cycle is broken just by the reflection, the dim reflection, just like before the sun actually rises in the morning, there's a reflection of the sun. So similarly, by the reflection of Krishna consciousness, abhasa rupa, it means just by the dim twilight form of that, or the morning sunlight form of that, it destroys all the different kinds of sinful reactions. So that's how powerful the sun of bhakti is. Therefore, again, in Srimad Bhagavatam, it's recommended that one take to the process of bhakti and not any other process. Akama sarvakamova mokshakama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Means that doesn't matter what situation of life we're in now. Means if you're free from desire, or if you have all desire, or you even desire liberation. Akama sarvakamova mokshakama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena. Means by the concentrated ray of bhakti, yajeta purusham param, that concentrated ray of bhakti will completely purify the soul, and everything necessary for advancement in devotional service, for advancement in spiritual life, will be manifest. Vasudeva is the source of everything. Vadanti tat tattva vidas tattvam yaj gyanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabdite. He's the source of Brahman and Paramatma, and just by worshipping Vasudev, Srimad Bhagavatam confirms that one gains everything necessary for advancement in spiritual life. Vasudeve bhagavati bhakti yoga prayojita janayat yashu vairagyam gyanam chayara haitukam. Very quickly, one gets gyan and vairagya just by worshipping Krishna with bhakti. We read the story before some of you came in of how Balaram killed the demon Pralambasura. And Krishna killed many demons in Vrindavan. Can you think of some of the other demons that Krishna killed? Putana. So Putana approached Krishna. She was employed by Kamsa. All these demons were sent by Kamsa because Kamsa was the head demon and he wanted to see Krishna dead. In fact, Kamsa thought about Krishna 24 hours a day, didn't he? He thought of him all the time, favorably or unfavorably? Highly unfavorably. So someone said unfavorably, then highly unfavorably. So he was highly unfavorable towards Krishna. Do you know anybody who's highly unfavorable towards Krishna? Shishupal, do you personally know anybody? Have you ever met anybody who's highly unfavorable to Krishna? Atheist? I met a police officer once in New York City. I was sent to distribute books at a train station. It wasn't Grand Central Station. Penn Station, thank you. I went to Penn Station and I was distributing books. And I was walking around and a police officer came over and he said, "You can't do that here." And I said, "Okay." So I went and I sat down and I took prasadam and I thought, well, what would a heroic thing be to do? And I thought, well, I'll just go back out and do it anyway. I learned as I got older. So I saw that he was gone, so I went back out and I distributed books. And he came over, and this time he was angry because I disobeyed his instruction. So instead of arresting me, he took me to a back room and he told me to take out all the Lakshmi I had collected, and he knocked it under the floor, and he told me to pick it up. So as I was picking up, he smacked me with his billy club. Every time I'd reach down to get it, he hit me again. And I said, you know, we're just trying to serve God here. We're trying to spread love for God. And he said, you go back to wherever you came from, and you tell them that we hate God here. Those were his exact words, and I thought, wow, so these people do exist. So Kamsa was highly unfavorable. This gentleman seemed highly unfavorable. There are highly unfavorable living entities around the universe. So Kamsa, he was highly unfavorable, but he thought of Krishna 24 hours a day. Is this considered devotional service? After all, Krishna says, manmana bhavamad bhakto, think of me. So was Kamsa performing devotional service by thinking of Krishna in a highly unfavorable way? No? Who says no? Yes? Anybody know yes? Yes? No? Two no's? Anybody else? Let's get a vote here. Was it devotional service or not? No. Well, let's have a definition of devotional service then so we know why it's not. Who can give us a definition of devotional service that proves that Kamsa's was not devotional service? Yes. Well, this verse you said, Patram Pushpam Palam Do Yam Yomi Bhaktya Prayachati, said if you offer me with devotion, right? Love and devotion. But let's get a more precise definition. There's a very famous verse which gives a classical definition of bhakti. It's a nice citation. We can use it for supporting evidence. Who has another one which actually defines? I'll give you a hint of what I'm looking for. It's a verse from Rupa Goswami. Yes, Banabhata Prabhu. Can you give him the microphone, please?
Anyabilasita sunyam jnana karma jiravritam anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhaktirutama.
And what about that verse proves that by definition that Kamsa's thinking of Krishna in a highly unfavorable way was not devotional service? Okay. Let's look up the verse. Who knows what page it's on? Anyabilasita sunyam jnana karma. Thank you, Banabhata Prabhu. Let's give him a hand for that. Anyabilashita shunyam jnana karma yanavritam. First of all, devotional service is free from any kind of karma. That means endeavor for getting material gain, or any jnana, which means speculative knowledge, speculating about Krishna. And it's also anukul. Anukul means favorable. It's service which is done with the idea of pleasing Krishna, of doing something favorable to Krishna, not something unfavorable. Therefore, Kamsas, did you find it? What page is it? 394. This is a very important verse. And everyone, homework, you can learn this verse over the next week. Okay? If you don't know the verse, then study this verse and learn it this week. Because we'll have a quiz on it when you come back next Sunday. And the best way to learn it, or one way, I'll say, there are many ways, but one way is you could write it down on an index card and carry it with you for the week. Is that okay? Do we have any index cards here stashed anywhere? Okay. There might be some in that box back there, that analogies box that we started. Hare Krishna. It's in the like the book cupboard at the bottom, that box, that blue box. Might be some in there. Check there. We can pass out some index cards. Write this verse down, the verse in translation, and carry it in your pocket. And then when you're driving down the freeway, 101 freeway, pull it out and look at it as you're driving. No, I'm just kidding. When you're stopped and parked and, you know, off the freeway, you can look at it. When you're waiting in line at the bank, in the morning time, pull it out, look at it. When you wake up in the morning, before you go to bed at night, look at it. Look at it at least 7 times a day. You don't have to, you know, go into it deeply, but at least review it in your mind. Just glance at it 7 times a day, times 7 days this week. How many times will you have looked at it? Okay, so 49 times ought to put it somewhere in your consciousness. Anya bilashita shunyam. And if you like, you can use different colors when you write it down. Like I recommend, write down the Sanskrit part in one color, like blue, and then right underneath the Sanskrit, you can write the word meaning in red. And then on the back, you can write the translation in another color. Okay? So that's the homework. Anya bilashita shunyam. Jnana karmanya navratam anakulyena krishnanu shilanam bhakti rutama. When first-class devotional service develops, one must be devoid of all material desires, knowledge obtained by monistic philosophy, and fruit of action. The devotee must constantly serve Krishna favorably as Krishna desires. So, Kamsa's devotional service was not favorable. So we were talking about Putana and how Kamsa was the head of the demons. He employed all these demons and encouraged them to go to Vrindavan and kill the children there. Because, thank you for looking. Who told Kamsa that Krishna was already born and was in Vrindavan? See, Kamsa wasn't sure about what happened because there was a switcheroo that happened. He heard that the 8th child of Devaki was going to kill him, right? But what happened when he went for the 8th child of Devaki? Who did he find instead? Durga. So he went in and he had heard the prophecy and he believed it, right? When did he hear the prophecy? On the way home from the wedding of Devaki and Vasudev. He was riding on the chariot and it was a huge fanfare. They were all coming home and an unembodied voice from the sky said, Kamsa, you're a fool. Because you're taking care of your sister, and she's her 8th child is going to kill you. And what did he do? Grabbed Devaki by the hair. What kind of demon is this? He grabbed his sister by the hair, pulled out his sword. He was just about to kill her just from hearing this prophecy. He was so concerned with his own wife. Hansapriya Mataji Haribo. She just returned from Vrindavan about 2 hours ago. Hare Krishna. Welcome back. Haribo. We've been missing you. Jai. We can't wait to hear about Vrindavan. Safe trip? Everything okay? Oh, good. Good. Well, we're just talking about Vrindavan and how Kamsa, when he grabbed Devaki on the chariot, was just about to kill her. And then who intervened? Who saved Devaki's life? Vasudev. What did he tell her? Tell him. Microphone.
Initially, Vasudev tried to preach him some philosophy about how soul is eternal and all those things, but he didn't bother about it. And later on, Vasudev promised him that he would give every child of Devaki when they'll be born. So, and Kamsa knew very well about the very well that Vasudev is going to keep up his promise, so he agreed.
Thank you very much. Exactly. Yes.
He tried three ways because Kamsa was a demon. So, Sama, the Beda, Danda, and Abheda, he tried all three. Finally, he agreed. The first one, he said, "You are a Kshatriya and hence killing stree. What to speak of your sister? You are such a great person. I mean, this is a diplomacy." And still he did not listen. Then he come to philosophy that anyways, everybody, whoever has born has to go. We are all eternal souls, so there is no point in so upset about it that you will be killed. That didn't work. And then finally the promise of giving, actually Devaki is not your killer or future killer, but her child. So I will offer every single child. And he believed the word of another Kshatriya because he knew him. So he finally agrees to that okay.
Thank you. Very nice. So while we're in this world, we have to do the best we can to preserve our life and preserve the life of those who we're protecting, right? Because there are many dangers in this world, and there are many ways that other living entities might try to take advantage of us. In fact, the Srimad Bhagavatam states, Ahastani sahastanam apadani chatushpadam palguni tatra mahatam jivo jiva sajivanam. This verse says that one living being is food for another in this world. Or as the old cliche goes, it's a dog-eat-dog world. One person is trying to take advantage of another. This is the nature of the material world. And while we're living our life, we have to preserve our life so that we can go on with self-realization. We do the best we can. Ultimately, however, we take shelter of Krishna because we can't ultimately protect ourselves or those around us, although we may do the best job we can, without the authorization of Krishna. Balasya neham sharanam pitaro nishingha nartasya chagana mudan mati majatono taptasya tat prativir yaihanjasheshtas tavad bibo tanubitam. Tvarupekshitanam. Upeksha means neglect, and if the Lord doesn't protect one, then no one can save somebody. But Vasudev was acting to save his new wife, and he did the best job he could using all kinds of methods, and finally, one of them appealed to Kamsa, and he agreed to stay the execution because of the word of Vasudev. It's also very important, and it's noted, that our word should be impeccable. Our reputation should be intact, because if we do what we're going to say we're going to do, then people will begin to trust us. And if we get a reputation for not doing what we're going to say we're going to do, or we're not truthful, then it's very difficult to get on in life. So Vasudev was noted for being very truthful. Therefore, Kamsa understood that his word was his bond. So, who told... Yes. Narada Muni came and told Kamsa everything at one point. He told him that actually you've been tricked. Krishna's already born. He's in Vrindavan. He was born. He was switched. And you didn't know it. So then Kamsa began his persecutions even more vehemently. And one of the demons that came to kill Krishna was Putana. So what form did she take? A what? A mother. She was like a witch. And she had a gigantic, heinous-looking form, but she transformed herself through mystic power into looking like a very beautiful nursemaid. So attractive she was that when she walked into the assembly where Krishna was just lying as a little baby, Mother Yashoda and the other women there just thought she was one of the well-wishers, another well-wisher of Krishna who had come to visit him. So they led her right through. And she went to pick up Krishna. And she did, but before she did, she had smeared a deadly poison on her breast with the intention of killing Krishna. So Krishna took her breast and took the milk, but he also took her life. He sucked out the milk, then he sucked out her very life. And she was crying out loud, "Oh, child, leave me, leave me." She was trying to get him off her, but she was dealing with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even though he was in the form of a small baby. Because Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, always. Even when he's in the form of a small baby, he's all-powerful. She didn't know she was dealing with fire. So as she died, she took a gigantic form. And when Krishna's mother and father came, they found Krishna crawling on this gigantic form of Putana. Now, one great devotee, Uddhava, has noted that he's actually asked the question, who would take shelter of anyone else other than Krishna? Because Krishna was so kind that even though Putana came to kill him with pretending to be his mother and smeared deadly poison on her breast, her intention was to kill Krishna. But Krishna accepted that she had dressed as a mother, and therefore he accepted the service that, oh, she's my mother. And she attained a position in the spiritual world very much like one of Krishna's mothers. So Uddhava asks, who would take shelter of anyone else? Because Krishna is so merciful that he takes the best thing. Even if you have some evil intention, he'll find some good quality and he'll accept that and give you the benefit for that. So he killed Putana in that way and also liberated her. What other demons came to kill Krishna? Bana. Aristasura. Can you tell us about Arista?
Aristasura took the form of a gigantic bull and attacked Krishna with his horns.
Anything more? You want to hear more about Arista? Yeah? Okay. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Rama Rama Hare Hare. Okay, just looking for Arista. Pralamba. Keshi. Okay. I think it's right here. 236. Here it is. Chapter 35. Vrindavan was always absorbed in thought of Krishna. Everyone remembered his pastimes and was constantly merged in the ocean of transcendental bliss. But the material world is so contaminated that even in Vrindavan, the asuras or demons try to disturb the peaceful situation. One demon named Aristasura entered the village like a great bull with a gigantic body and horns, digging up the earth with his hooves. When the demon entered Vrindavan, it appeared that the whole land trembled, as if there were an earthquake. He roared fiercely, and after digging up the earth on the riverside, he entered the village proper. The fearful roaring of the bull was so piercing that some of the pregnant cows and women had miscarriages. Its body was so big, stout and strong, that a cloud hovered over its body, just as clouds hover over mountains. Aristasura entered Vrindavan with such a fearful appearance that just on seeing this great demon, all the men and women were afflicted with great fear, and the cows and other animals fled the village. The situation became very terrible, and all the inhabitants of Vrindavan began to cry, "Krishna, Krishna, please save us." Krishna also saw that the cows were running away, and he immediately replied, "Don't be afraid, don't be afraid." He then appeared before Aristasura and said, "You are the lowest of living entities. Why are you frightening the inhabitants of Gokula? What will you gain by this action? If you have come to challenge my authority, then I am prepared to fight you." In this way, Krishna challenged the demon, and the demon became very angry by the words of Krishna. Krishna stood before the bull, resting his hand on the shoulder of a friend. The bull began to proceed toward Krishna in great anger, digging the earth with its hooves. Arista lifted his tail, and it appeared that clouds were hovering about the tail. His eyes were reddish and moving in anger. Pointing his horns at Krishna, he began to charge him just like a thunderbolt of Indra. But Krishna immediately caught his horns and tossed him away, just as a gigantic elephant repels a small, inimical elephant. Although the demon appeared to be very tired, and although he was perspiring, he took courage and got up. Again he charged Krishna with great force and anger. While rushing towards Krishna, he breathed very heavily. Krishna again caught his horns and immediately threw him to the ground, breaking his horns. Krishna then began to kick his body, just as one squeezes a wet cloth on the ground. Being thus kicked by Krishna, Aristasura rolled over and began to move his legs violently. Bleeding and passing stool and urine, his eyes starting from their sockets, he passed to the kingdom of death. The demigods and the celestial planets began to shower flowers on Krishna for his wonderful achievements. Krishna was already the life and soul of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, and after killing this demon in the shape of a bull, he became the cynosure of all eyes. With Balaram, he triumphantly entered Vrindavan village, and the inhabitants glorified him and Balaram with great jubilation. When a person performed some wonderful feat, his kinsmen and relatives and friends naturally become jubilant. It was after this incident that the great sage Narada disclosed the secret of Krishna. Narada Muni is generally known as Devadarshan, which means that he can be seen only by demigods, or persons who are on the same level with the demigods. But Narada visited Kamsa, who was not at all on the level of the demigods, and yet Kamsa saw him. Of course, Kamsa also saw Krishna, what to speak of Narada Muni, but generally one must have purified eyes to see the Lord and his devotees. Of course, by association with a pure devotee, one can derive an imperceptible benefit, which is called agyata sukriti. He cannot understand how he is making progress, yet he makes progress by seeing the devotee of the Lord. Narada Muni's mission was to finish things quickly. Krishna appeared to kill the demons, and Kamsa was the chief among them. Narada wanted to expedite things. Therefore, he immediately approached Kamsa with all the real information. "You are to be killed by the eighth son of Vasudev," Narada told Kamsa. "That eighth son is Krishna. You were misled by Vasudev into believing that the eighth issue of Vasudev was a daughter. Actually, the daughter was born of Yashoda, the wife of Nanda Maharaj. And Vasudev exchanged the daughter, so you were misled. Krishna is the son of Vasudev, as is Balaram. Being afraid of your atrocious nature, Vasudev has tactfully hidden them in Vrindavan out of your sight." Narada further informed Kamsa, "Krishna and Balaram have been living incognito in the care of Nanda Maharaj. All the asuras, your companions, who were sent to Vrindavan to kill different children, were all killed by Krishna and Balaram." As soon as Kamsa got this information from Narada Muni, he took out his sharpened sword and prepared to kill Vasudev for his duplicity. But Narada pacified him. "You are not to be killed by Vasudev," he said. "Why are you so anxious to kill him? Better try to kill Krishna and Balaram." But in order to satisfy his wrath, Kamsa arrested Vasudev and his wife and shackled them in iron chains. Acting on the new information, Kamsa immediately called for the Keshi demon and asked him to go to Vrindavan immediately to fetch Balaram and Krishna. In actuality, Kamsa asked Keshi to go to Vrindavan to be killed by Krishna and Balaram and thus get salvation. Then Kamsa called for the expert elephant trainers, Chanura, Mushtika, Shala, Toshala, etc., and he told them, "My dear friends, try to hear me attentively. At Nanda Maharaj's place in Vrindavan, there are two brothers, Krishna and Balaram. They are actually two sons of Vasudev. As you know, I have been destined to be killed by Krishna. There is a prophecy to this effect. Now I am requesting you to arrange for a wrestling match. People from different parts of the country will come to see the festival. I will arrange to get those two boys here, and you will try to kill them in the wrestling arena." Wrestling matches are still enjoyed by the indigenous people in the northern part of India, and it appears in the statements of Srimad Bhagavatam that 5,000 years ago, wrestling was popular. Kamsa planned to arrange such a wrestling competition and to invite people to visit. He also told the trainers of the elephants, "Be sure to bring the elephant named Kuvalayapida and keep him at the gate of the wrestling camp. Try to capture Krishna and Balaram on their arrival and kill them." Kamsa also advised his friends to arrange to worship Lord Shiva by offering animal sacrifices and performing the sacrifice known as Dhanur Yajna, and the sacrifice performed on the 14th day of the moon known as Chaturdasi. This date falls 3 days after Ekadashi, and it is set aside for the worship of Lord Shiva. One of the plenary portions of Lord Shiva is called Kalabhairava. This form of Lord Shiva is worshipped by the demons, who, after offer skinned animals before him. The process is still current in India in a place called Vaidyanath Dham, where the demons offer animal sacrifices to the deity of Kalabhairava. Kamsa belonged to this demoniac group. He was also an expert diplomat, and so he quickly arranged for his demon friends to kill Krishna and Balaram. He then called for Akrura, one of the descendants in the family of Yadu, in which Krishna was born as the son of Vasudev. When Akrura came to see Kamsa, Kamsa very politely shook hands with him and said, "My dear Akrura, actually I have no better friend than you in the Bhoja and Yadu dynasties. You are the most munificent person, so as a friend I am begging charity from you. Actually, I have taken shelter of you exactly as King Indra takes shelter of Lord Vishnu. I request you to go immediately to Vrindavan and find the two boys named Krishna and Balaram. They are sons of Nanda Maharaj. Take this nice chariot, especially prepared for the boys, and bring them here immediately. That is my request to you. Now my plan is to kill these two boys. As soon as they come in the gate, There will be a giant elephant named Kuvalayapida awaiting, and possibly he will be able to kill them. But if somehow or other they escape, they will next meet the wrestlers and will be killed by them. That is my plan. And after killing these two boys, I shall kill Vasudeva and Nanda, who are supporters of the Vrishni and Bhoja dynasties. I shall also kill my father Ugrasena and his brother Devaka, because they are actually my enemies and are hindrances to my diplomacy and politics. Thus I shall get rid of all my enemies. Jarasandha is my father-in-law, and I have a great monkey friend named Dvidvid. With their help, it will be easy to kill all the kings on the surface of the world who support the demigods. This is my plan. In this way, I shall be free from all opposition, and it will be very pleasant to rule the world without obstruction. You may know also that Shambhara, Narakasura, Banasura are my intimate friends, and when I begin this war against the kings who support the demigods, they will help me considerably. Surely I shall be rid of all my enemies. Please go immediately to Vrindavan and encourage the boys to come here to see the beauty of Mathura and take pleasure in the wrestling competition. After hearing this plan of Kamsa's, Akura replied, "My dear king, your plan is very excellently made to counteract the hindrances to your diplomatic activities. But you should maintain some discretion, or your plans will not be fruitful. After all, man proposes and God disposes. We may make very great plans, but unless they are sanctioned by the supreme authority, they will fail. Everyone in this material world knows that the supernatural power is the ultimate disposer of everything. One may make a very great plan with his fertile brain, but he must know that he will become subjected to the fruits, misery, and happiness. But I have nothing to say against your proposal. As a friend, I shall carry out your order and bring Krishna and Balaram here as you desire." After instructing his friends in various ways, Kamsa retired and Akura went to Vrindavan. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the second volume, first chapter of Krishna. Kamsa sends Akura for Krishna. So we're talking about how Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he's, even as a child, he's supremely powerful. He's eternally existing. His body is transcendental. It's not like an ordinary material body. An ordinary material body is distinguished by its different elements. The Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes Indriyani Paranyahur Indriyebhya Paramana Manasastu Parabudhir Yobude Paratastusa, that for the embodied soul there are senses, and above the senses there is the mind, and above the mind there is the, and above the intelligence there is the soul, and above the soul there is the Paramatma, the super soul. So the body and the soul are different for a living entity. But Krishna's body and Krishna's soul are the same. Correct? Correct, everybody? Can you prove it? You have to be able to prove it in a court of law. Well, this is a spiritual court of law, so you have to bring evidence to prove, evidence to bear your theory. To prove your theory, we accept Bhagavad Gita as evidence. It's the authority, it's the law book. It's authorized, except by all authorities. We have to accept some authority in this world, right? When Prabhupada went to Russia a long time ago, Professor Katovsky, he said that he was talking about how everyone has to accept some authority. Prabhupada said, "Yes, you accept Lenin, we accept Krishna." So it's true. Actually, everyone accepts some authority on faith. So if you don't accept some authority and some axiomatic truth, that then you get into the problem of infinite regress. Like if I want to prove that water boils at a certain temperature, Well, you can say, prove that water boils at a certain temperature. And then I'll bring some water and a thermometer, and then I'll boil it, and I'll say, see, it boils at, how? What temperature does it boil at? 200? 212. How did you know that? Did you Google it? Okay. Maybe you saw it on Oprah. Okay, so 212. So now I put the thermometer in, and it comes to 212, and then my protractor says, prove that's a real thermometer. So then I bring in my thermometer test kit, and I show that it's a real thermometer. He says, prove that's a real thermometer test kit. This is called infinite regress. You can go on forever because you have to accept some axiomatic truth at some point. Everyone does accept some authority at some point because we're not all-knowing. We can't see everything, so we accept certain things. Therefore, through the one can study the Shastra. We can look at Bhagavad Gita and see, as Arjuna said, that Asita, Devala, Vyas, all these great authorities accept you as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now you're saying it yourself. And we can look at all the authorities that say that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And also we can look at the book itself and the process itself. Krishna says, Raja Vidya Raja Guyam Pavitram Idam Uttamam Pratyakshavagamam Dharmyam Susukam Kartamavyayam. That the process of devotional service is directly perceived. So as Srila Prabhupada says in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, in the introduction, at least theoretically, if you accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then you'll do much better in being able to experience the process. And when you take it, you can experience for yourself. Bhakti parishanu bhava virakti anya traisha trika eka kala prapadya manasi yatasnata sus tushti pushti shud apayonu gasam. One of the nine yogendras says it's like this. It's like a hungry person, when he eats a meal, understands for himself that he's getting nourished, that his hunger is going away, and that he's getting satisfaction. So someone who takes directly to the process of devotional service, accepting the authority of Krishna, will experience for him or herself bhakti, will experience direct perception of Krishna, and will also become detached from all other things which are not related to Krishna. Just as when you eat food, then you experience a sense of detachment because your hunger goes away. So we're asking for proof from the Bhagavad Gita, which we're accepting as the authority, that Krishna has a transcendental spiritual body. Okay, Bhana had his hand up first.
In the fourth chapter, Krishna says, Janma karma ch me divyam, evam yo vedi tatvata, tyaktvadeham punar janma, naitimam eti sorjuna. The one who understands the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving his body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my abode.
Okay, that's text number 9. And can you say more about how that proves Krishna has a transcendental body?
Well, because if Krishna's activities and his form were of this material world, then it would not be possible for one to go back to the spiritual world, to one's original spiritual position upon leaving the body.
Okay. So by effect, if you're meditating on Krishna, if you understand his transcendental nature, when you leave this body, Krishna says you'll go back to the spiritual world. Okay, what else you got? Rakshit was next.
There's also another verse in the fourth chapter. This is 4:6. Ajo api san.
Page 199.
Ajo api san avyayatma bhutanam ishvaro api san prakritim swam adhistaya sambhavami atma mayaya. Although I am unborn and my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I am the Lord of all living entities, I still appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form.
Pretty direct evidence. So this verse is directly saying that Krishna is saying himself that his body is transcendental, never deteriorates. That's some good proof. Anything else? Ramaswamy, you have something?
Remember the verse, but I have some vague recollection. The purport goes like this: fools deride me when I I'm not able to completely recollect. It says okay. That they don't know that my transcendental nature or something like that.
How about Naham Prakashya Sarvasya Yogamaya Samavrita Mudo Yam Nabijananti Lokamama Jamaya Avyayam. That's in the 7th chapter. That should be the 24th verse. Page 357. We could sing it together. Naham prakasha sarvasya yogamaya samavritaha mudho yam nabijanati loko mama jamavyayam. I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. For them I am covered by my internal potency, and therefore they do not know that I am unborn and infallible. That's a good citation. So Krishna's form is infallible, and it's transcendental. So he's the supreme personality of Godhead. And as Banabhata brought forth, by meditating on Krishna, by understanding him, then we don't take birth again in this material world just by knowing Krishna, just by knowing the transcendental nature of his existence. Now I'd like to read you this purport, if I may, which starts on page 205. This is very important information. It's very encouraging for us because we're practicing bhakti yoga, right? And bhakti yoga means what? Means what?
Service and devotion.
Service and devotion, yes. And what does Krishna say that we should do in order to be connected to him all the time? Chant, yes. Be humble, tolerant, yes. Always remember him. Manmana bhavamad bhakto. So the mind, man. So this is one place we can concentrate. Here's our practical side of bhakti yoga. The mind is the reservoir of all changes. One day it wants toys, like maybe around this time of year, 40 years ago, 45 years ago, I was probably dreaming every day about what toys I was going to get, because Christmas is coming right around the corner. And in America, we get toys for Christmas when you're a kid. And I wanted all kinds of toys, and now I don't care for those toys anymore, because that's a product of the mind. At one point, the mind was saying, you need toys, and now my mind's saying, I don't want any toys. Accepting one thing and rejecting it another time. The mind's reservoir of all changes. And what else does the mind do? It hankers and laments, and it also carries us from one body to the next, doesn't it? Krishna says this in the Bhagavad Gita, your mind, the state of your mind is what's going to determine where you go in your next life, isn't it? Yang yang vapi smaran bhavam tajat yante kalevaram tam tam evaiti konteya satat tat bhava bhavitaha. Wherever your mind is situated at the time of death, that state you'll attain without fail. So the state of the mind is very important. That's why we sing, Nachariyar Marman, Nachariyar Marman, Nachariyar Marman, Nachariyar Marman, because we want our mind to dance with the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. So therefore Krishna says, Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto. He said, engage your mind always in thinking of me. So we want to think of Krishna. And we want the mind to be engaged in Krishna, because when the time of death comes, and when is that? Time of death.
Very soon.
Well, Maharaj Parikshit had 7 days to live, right? Isn't it? When he was cursed, he had 7 days. How many days do we have? No, we do know. We have 7 days also. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. One of those days. It's going to be a Monday, a Tuesday, a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. So we also have 7 days to live. So we should think like Maharaj Pariksit. And his question is, what's my duty at the time of death? I have 7 days to live. And the answer was to fix your mind on Krishna. Remember Krishna, don't forget Krishna. And let's move up by 8 inches because it's getting crowded. So the mind, this is practical. We have to engage the mind in thinking of Krishna. The mind's the reservoir of all changes, and the mind wants to travel from one place to another, and it will actually take us from one body to the next. Shariram yadavapnoti yachchap yukramatishvaram grahit vaitani samyati vayur gandam ivashayat. Just like the wind, the breeze, when it blows over a garden and it carries the aroma of flowers. So when the mind goes over certain kinds of topics, then at the time of death, it will carry us to that next place according to the nature, the scent of the mind that will carry us. So if we're thinking of Krishna, then we'll go to Krishna. Yanti deva vrta devam pitrin yanti pratir vrta bhutani yanti bhuteja yanti mam yajinopi mam. Krishna says, those who worship me, come to me. Those who worship demigods, go to the demigods. Those who worship forefathers, go to the forefathers. Everyone's going somewhere, right? And where attention goes, energy flows. So our energy is flowing according to where we put our attention. So the science of bhakti yoga is to put our attention towards Krishna. Manmana bhava mad bhakto. We want our mind to be absorbed in Krishna. Madhyaji mam namaskuru. What does this mean? Worship me and offer your obeisances to me. How easy is that, to offer obeisances to Krishna? Can we have a demonstration? Okay, let's have a demonstration. There's a couple of ways to offer obeisances to Krishna. This is one way. We'll maybe do it in front so we can see. Here we go. Okay, there's two kinds of obeisances. One is like this. This is called a dandavat. This is in Shastra, it's explained how there are many different parts of the body, practically all the different parts of the body are touching, and then there's a second kind of obeisance like this, and then there's a third kind like this. Thank you very much. Give him a hand for that. So even if you go to Mayapur, you know, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Inanda are so merciful. It's described in the Mayapur, the Navadvipa Mahatmya. If you go to Mayapur and you're a very sleepy kind of person and you sleep all day, the Lord's so merciful that he considers that, well, he's offering dandavats. So making advancement, offering obeisances in the Dham. But normally, this is one of the best ways to make advancement in devotional service. And our acharyas, the Goswamis, They were expert at this. Sankhya purvaka namagana natibi kalavasani krito. It's described how, in a measured way, every day they would bow down to the Lord and his devotees a certain number of times. They'd count them, actually, to show us an example. So one thing you can do is bow down every time you see the Lord, or every time you see an advanced devotee, you can bow down. You could do these things. It's very practical, actually. Some devotees, although it's not really in our line to do this dandavat parikram, there's no evidence that anybody in our line actually did dandavat parikram of Govardhan. Maybe something about going around Radhakund, Shyamakund. But in any case, when you bow down like that and do that dandavat, there's a feeling that you get that you don't get any other place and in any other position where you're fully extended like this before the Lord. You're giving your whole self. It's like Atma Nivedana. You're saying, I surrender. And we see this position also sometimes, if you've ever seen on television. Yeah, there's a show called Cops. But that's not the kind of dandavats we're looking for. Where it's a high-speed chase. They cut away from the presidential debate and it's a high-speed chase on television. And it goes on for 5 hours till the tires are blown out, till the guy runs out of gas. He's running, and then he gets out, and then he's running through you know, sticker bushes and over barbed wire fences. They're chasing him with dogs. And finally, he realizes there's no way out, so he falls on the ground like this. And they put his, you know, arms back and in the handcuffs. But we don't want to do that. We want to do it before it comes to that. And we're like, okay, now I give up. I've been running for many lifetimes. Now I surrender. So this is namaskaru, offer obeisances. You could put your head before the Lord. And Krishna says, this is devotional service. Bow down to me. Just put your head down. It feels good. This is human life. It's civilized to put your head before the Lord, to bow down before the Lord, bow down before the devotees of the Lord. Then you make advancement. It pleases Krishna. Krishna is also there within the heart of the devotees. So when we offer obeisances to other living entities, we also were offering obeisances to Krishna within the heart. For those who see that Krishna is everywhere. Vidya vinaya sampane brahmani gavi hastani shuni chaiva shvapake cha pandita samadarshina. The learned person sees that Krishna is within the heart of the elephant, within the heart of the cow, within the heart of the dog, within the dog eater, within the Brahmin, within the elevated person. He sees that Krishna is within everyone's heart. So we have manmana bhavamad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. Worship Krishna. There's ways of worshiping Krishna. In the Kali Yuga, the best way to worship Krishna is by Nam Sankirtan. This is described as the Yuga Dharma. So in every age, there's a prescribed kind of yajna or sacrifice where you get the maximum benefit. And the maximum benefit you can obtain by doing yajna, and human life is meant for yajna. When you do yajna, you get great benefit. This is called tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam. When you do divine austerity for the sake of the Lord, you do something for the sake of the Lord which takes you out of your comfort zone. So the best thing you can do in Kali Yuga is called the Yuga Dharma of Nam Sankirtan. It means congregational chanting of the names of the Lord. It also includes all kinds of ways of broadcasting the information about the Lord, including distribution of literature, which is written kirtan. By distributing that, that's called the Brihat Madanga. This is called a Madanga. Actually, it's technically called a kol, but we call it a Madanga. And this can be heard for a few blocks. Like at a Market Impal on Friday, we had a gigantic Harinam performance. And people lined up, thousands of people, to watch the Harinam performance, right? And it was very blissful. And then the printing press that prints these books is called the Brihat Madanga, or the Greater Madanga, because it's writing the kirtan on pages. We distribute it, and the books go all over the world. Just like Milan Doshi Prabhu. When you come back, we'll tell the story. Could be somebody calling in to give a donation to the Motel Sankirtan, and I think that's why he jumped up so fast. Okay, you ready? While we were on Harinam Sankirtan on Friday, I met a boy named Terrence. Terrence had already bought a couple of books from somebody else at the table, and he was very eager to read them. And I asked him how he became introduced to Krishna consciousness. And he told me that he had checked into a motel, and he happened to find the Bhagavad Gita in the motel. I guess that Dainini will get the... Thank you, Dainini. And that started his life of Krishna consciousness. So some of you might not know, but Milan Doshi and Dilip Patel have collaborated, and together, through their brainstorming and hard work, they've distributed thousands and thousands of Bhagavad Gitas this year to motels and hotels all over California. And they're getting hotel and motel owners to put the Bhagavad Gitas in the drawer right next to the Gideon's Bible. And now we're finding that people are reading them and becoming devotees. So I got Terrence to write us a testimonial for your little flip book that you can show to people, and his email address so that you can keep in touch with him. So Milan Doshi, he sits by the phone when he comes here, because every time it rings, we're waiting for more and more donations to come in to subsidize his program. People are sending from England. They're calling in on this phone regularly to donate more and more Lakshmi for the Motel Hotel Sankirtan party. And so are many of us in the congregation dishing out cash to fuel this unlimited program, which is spreading all over America right now. Let's give Milan Doshi Prabhu a hand. Hare Krishna. So, manmana bhavamad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. Just think of Krishna, do some worship for Krishna. Best kind of worship is Harinam Sankirtan, chanting Krishna's names, either in japa or together as a group, or distributing knowledge of Krishna in the written form, and bowing down before Krishna, and also become Krishna's devotee. So these are the ways that we can remember Krishna and become Krishna's devotee. And now, as promised, I'm going to read you this very inspiring purport from the Bhagavad Gita from page 205. And the verse is Janma Karma Chame Divyam Evam Yo Veti Tatvataha Tyaktva Deham Punar Janma Naiti Mam Eti Soarjuna. The translation is, one who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but obtains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. Purport. The Lord's descent from his transcendental abode is already explained in the sixth verse. One who can understand the truth of the appearance of the personality of Godhead is already liberated from material bondage, and therefore he returns to the kingdom of God immediately after quitting this present material body. Such liberation of the living entity from material bondage is not at all easy. The impersonalists and the yogis attain liberation only after much trouble and many, many births. Even then, the liberation they achieve, merging into the impersonal Brahmajyoti of the Lord, is only partial, and there is the risk of returning to this material world. But the devotee, simply by understanding the transcendental nature of the body and activities of the Lord, attains the abode of the Lord after ending this body and does not run the risk of returning to this material world. In the Brahma Sanhita, it is stated that the Lord has many, many forms and incarnations, Advaitam, Achutam, Anadim, Ananta Rupam. Although there are many transcendental forms of the Lord, they are still one and the same Supreme Personality of Godhead. One has to understand this fact with conviction, although it is incomprehensible to mundane scholars and empiric philosophers. The Lord expands himself, right? In many, many different forms. Did you know that the devotees can also do that? Did you know? The devotees in their perfected state, they can be in several, many places at one time, just like the Lord can. This is confirmed in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita. So also in the Brahma Samhita, it's mentioned that those who are devotees of Mahaprabhu, of course, they're also simultaneously devotees of Radha and Krishna. So there's Navadvip Dham, where Lord Chaitanya performs his pastimes, and there's Vrindavan Dham. Is there any difference between the two? Anything? Navadvip and Vrindavan, are they the same? Yes? They're the same. Deepak's giving a definite yes. But there is one slight difference mentioned in Shastra. It's only in quality. And that is that Vrindavan is called Madhurya. It's full of sweetness. It's all sweet. Madhuram, madhuram, vaparasya vibhur. Madhuram, madhuram, badanam, madhuram. That's all sweet, all sweet, all sweet. But in Navadvip, in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it's called audarya. And audarya is all sweetness, but it's like a container that's filled up with sweetness and it's overflowing. So much so that it's distributing that sweetness like a river to all kinds of other people as well. So they are the same, because Lord Krishna and Lord Chaitanya are the same. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nahi Anya. But the devotees of Mahaprabhu, who are also devotees of Radha and Krishna, they live simultaneously in Mayapur, in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, and in Vrindavan, in the pastimes of Lord Krishna, at the same time. inconceivable. Although there are many transcendental forms of the Lord, they are still one and the same Supreme Personality of Godhead. One has to understand this fact with conviction, although it is incomprehensible to mundane scholars and empiric philosophers. As stated in the Vedas, Purusha Bodhini Upanishad, Eko Devo Nitya Lilanurakto, Bhakta Vyapi Hridyantar Atma. The one Supreme Personality of Godhead is eternally engaged in many, many transcendental forms in relationships with his unalloyed devotees. This Vedic version is confirmed in this verse of the Gita personally by the Lord. He who accepts this truth on the strength of the authority of the Vedas and of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and who does not waste time in philosophical speculations, attains the highest perfectional stage of liberation. Simply by accepting this truth on faith, one can, without a doubt, attain liberation. I'm going to back up two sentences because I want you to hear this again. This is a part very encouraging. From the bottom of page 205. He who accepts this truth on the strength of the authority of the Vedas and of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and who does not waste time in philosophical speculations, attains the highest perfectional stage of liberation. Simply by accepting this truth on faith, one can, without a doubt, attain liberation. The Vedic version, Tattvamasi, is actually applied in this case. Anyone who understands Lord Krishna to be the Supreme, or who says unto the Lord, "You are the same Supreme Brahman, the Personality of Godhead," is certainly liberated instantly. Okay, everyone please say, "You are the same Supreme Brahman, the Personality of Godhead." Anyone who says this is certainly liberated instantly. And consequently, his entrance into the transcendental association of the Lord is guaranteed. In other words, such a faithful devotee of the Lord attains perfection, and this is confirmed by the following Vedic assertion. Tam eva viditvati mrityum eti nanya panta vidyate yanaya. One can attain the perfect stage of liberation from birth and death simply by knowing the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and there is no other way to achieve this perfection. Shvetashvatara Upanishad. That there is no alternative means that anyone who does not understand Lord Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead is surely in the mode of ignorance, and consequently, he will not attain salvation, simply so to speak, by licking the outer surface of the bottle of honey, or by interpreting the Bhagavad Gita according to mundane scholarship. Such empiric philosophers may assume very important roles in the material world, but they are not necessarily eligible for liberation. Such puffed-up mundane scholars have to wait for the causeless mercy of the devotee of the Lord. One should therefore cultivate Krishna consciousness with faith and knowledge, and in this way attain perfection. Hari Bol. Okay, discussion. What do you think, Hare Krishna? Floor is open. Yes, Bana Prabhu. Microphone.
I just wanted to make say something really quick that came to my mind. Just the power of accepting authority is such that if one simply accepts, even theoretically, then immediately one makes spiritual advancement that surpasses, you know, the advancement one can make by engaging in the process of mental speculation for, you know, many, many lifetimes.
Yeah, that's a very fortunate position to be in, to be open to accepting the authority of Krishna. Now, there's a wonderful verse in that regard in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Would you like to see it? Okay, 13th chapter, and the verse is Number 26, page 594. Anye tvevam ajanantaha shutvane bhya upasate te pi chattitarantyeva mrityum shruti parayanaha. Again, there are those who, although not conversant in spiritual knowledge, begin to worship the Supreme Person upon hearing about him from others. Because of their tendency to hear from authorities, they also transcend the path of birth and death. We could let's move up one more time. This time, go for 6.2 inches. So, confirming Bhanabhata's proposition that just by accepting authority, if one accepts the authority of Krishna, those speaking about Krishna authoritatively, then one transcends birth and death. Nice point. Thank you. Yes, Bali Prabhu, please pass the microphone.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
I would like to remember one class given by Giriraj Maharaj, and he mentioned that how he became devotee for the first time. And he said that when he met the devotees and he was giving a ride to the devotees in his car, so one Mataji was sitting in front and she is talking about Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and what Giriraj Maharaj pointing out that I was so convinced it is not because that she is more knowledgeable than the empiric philosophers or the mundane scholars I've been hearing a lot. The first time I was attracted by her words, and later on I was convinced that why so much power in her words, it is not that she knows, it is because she is in the line of authority and she has accepted the authority, and that's why the power is within. So similarly, this word confirms that why the devotees of Krishna, when they spread, why it is so powerful and potent, because they are coming, joining in the line of authority, because they have accepted an authority, so that even though they may not be highly knowledgeable, but the words are more mature and spontaneous.
What a nice point. Thank you very much. Jai, Hare Krishna. What else? Yes, Prabhuji. Krishna Maheshwari Prabhu.
So I'd like to add a little bit of a side note to Bhanabhata Prabhu's comment, which is about mental speculation. To be clear, mentally speculating, no matter the number of lives you take, will never get you to Krishna. No amount of mental speculation ever will. And even sitting here and talking about the Gita will not, unless it is accompanied by sadhana and upasana. At which point, it's no longer mental speculation.
Thank you. Yes, Srinivas Prabhu.
One thing I notice is when we accept authority, the anarthas which are persistent in your mind, they easily evaporate or they disappear. Even though you've been trying to get rid of that anartha so much, but when you accept authority, it just disappears.
Nice. Thank you. Rakshit Prabhu?
In the light of this discussion, another point can be made is that knowledge about Krishna is actually coming via a descending process via the parampara system. And when we say authority, we are talking about acharyas and sages in this parampara system who have realized for themselves what Krishna is and are passing on this knowledge down in a disciplic succession to others who are receiving it. In that context, it can also be said that when we talk about processes of mental speculation and other things, jnana, we are after all going to be inquiring with our material senses. They themselves are limited. And Krishna says, I can only be known by devotional service, as he says in the 11th chapter and the 18th chapter. One learns devotional service from a spiritual master, enlightened soul, and one comes to know about Krishna through the disciplic succession.
Thank you. Other points or questions?
One question, Prabhuji. During the earlier part of today's lecture, you mentioned that if one knows Krishna, automatically he becomes the knower of everything. So in this context, what does it mean by knower of everything? Does it cover all the material knowledge also? Because knower of everything.
Well, covering all material knowledge, first of all, is impossible. In this sense, I mean, consider the fact that anything that you study intimately or intricately in this world, you'll never come to the end to anyway. Practically, in his conversations, morning walk conversations, particularly with Bhakti Srup Damodar Maharaj, Prabhupada brought up this topic frequently about how Krishna's energies are inconceivable. And they act in wonderful ways, even in the external energy. And he pointed out that even the simple activities, for instance, a lemon tree. If you observe a lemon tree and see how it's growing from a seed, and you try, for instance, just to duplicate that one thing, if you spend your whole time and all your resources, material knowledge, so-called, and you try to duplicate one lemon tree, you won't be able to do it. Create one seed. In fact, there was a challenge put out to scientists, create one egg, Prabhupada used to say. Create one egg, we'll give you there's some yellow, there's some white, there's a little shell. We'll give you all these ingredients, let's see you make an egg, and then make a chicken come out. Of course, he pointed out, even if they did create one living entity, there would be no great credit anyway, and he compared it to a circus. Sometimes at the circus, there's what's called a sideshow. And in the sideshow, they'll have these freakish people who can do things that are sort of abnormal. So in one of them, there's a man who can bark like a dog. And he sounds just like a dog. But then they charge $5 to go see him. So you pay the $5, and you go in, and there's a man sitting on stage, and you go, whoa, whoa, whoa. And yeah, it sounds just like a dog. But Prabhupada said, so he barks like a dog, but there's dogs up and down the street howling all day long. So similarly, which no one can, but if they were able to create one living entity, living entities are being generated all the time by Krishna's inconceivable energies. So what it means to understand, till we understand all material and spiritual knowledge, like in the first two verses of the seventh chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Maya sakta manaparta yogam yunjan marashaya asamsrayam samagramam yata gyasasi tachtrinu. He says, by hearing about me, you will come to know me in full, free from doubt. Asamsrayam. You'll not have any doubt. You'll know me. And then, gyanam teham savigyanam idam baksham yasheshita yajgyatvan buyonaj. Gyatavyam avishishite. And you'll come to know of all the categories of knowledge, like material knowledge, spiritual knowledge, so-called phenomenal knowledge, numinous knowledge that is related to this world and beyond. And it doesn't mean that then you'll be able to understand exactly how to create a lemon seed like that. You don't become omniscient or omnipotent by that. But by knowing Krishna, you'll know exactly where everything's coming from and how it's being manifest in this world. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate iti matbhava jante mam buddha bhava samanvita. Krishna says, everything emanates from me. The wise who know this perfectly engage wholeheartedly in my worship. They abandon everything. And this is perfection, actually, to understand that Krishna is the origin of everything at every second. And it remains inconceivable, however. And we see this, for instance, in the residence of Vrindavan, when Mother Yashoda had heard from the neighborhood children that Krishna had eaten dirt. She became perturbed, as any mother would. They came complaining that Krishna's eating dirt. So she came running to the place where Krishna was. And she took Krishna by the hand and put him on her lap, and she said, "They're saying that you ate dirt." And Krishna said, "They're lying. They always lie about me." He said, "If you don't believe me, then just look in my mouth and see if you see any dirt." So he opened his mouth, and Mother Jashoda looked in. Well, she saw dirt, but that was the whole universe. And beyond, the whole creation she saw within his mouth. He said, "That's okay. Just close your mouth." She didn't want to see it. And Krishna is inconceivable. He's unlimited. He's unlimitedly big. He's unlimitedly small as well. Anuraniyam, he's the biggest of the big and the smallest of the small. Sometimes in material science, people pride themselves in making something big, like a 747. And it is kind of amazing, you know, to get a big 747. It's got the four engines on it. And then you can sit inside there and, you know, have a lunch sitting there, have a salad while you're going 7,700 miles an hour. That's kind of amazing. But can they make a 747 that's the size of a mosquito? Can you imagine a little airplane that small? Size of a mosquito that actually flies around? But Krishna can do that. But the point is, my point is that it's inconceivable, material nature, the biggest, the smallest. And therefore, it's not that we'll understand exactly everything that's going on, but we understand where it's coming from. Just like we say that a devotee's senses are perfect. A devotee has perfect senses, right? And that really means that a devotee never falls into the illusion of mistaking that anything's separate from Krishna, understands that everything's coming from Krishna at every minute. Asarva bhuteshu ya pasyed bhagavad bhavamatmana bhutani bhagavat yatmani esha bhagavatottama. The uttama bhakta, the highest devotee, is one who at all times sees everything in relationship to Krishna and therefore wants to engage it in Krishna's service. So the meaning of knowing everything by knowing the Supreme Personality of Godhead is seeing everything in its proper perspective and understanding that it's all coming from Krishna. And the conclusion of that is expressed in the verse, Aham sarvasya pravavo matak sarvam pravartite iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvita, that there's no other conclusion except to surrender to Krishna. Vasudeva sarvam iti sa mahatma sadurlabha. And the conclusion is of a perfected life is someone who's completely dedicated themselves to Krishna's service. And this means knowing everything, because you know Krishna. You know the source of everything. Also, you know everything that you need to know. And everything is provided for such a person. Annaschintantomam yejana pariupasate tesham nityabdiyuktanam yogakshemam vahamyaham. Krishna says, one who is always meditating on my transcendental form, to such a person I carry what he lacks and I preserve what he has. So a devotee who knows Krishna is the source of everything, always meditating on Krishna, never makes a mistake of being separated from Krishna, and Krishna is always in connection with that devotee, taking care of the devotee personally in an intimate relationship. So there's never any separation from Krishna and the devotee. And in that way, he knows everything. Anything else? Is that all right? Okay. Anything else? Deepak.
One different question.
Yes.
Every time when we see the deity of Radha Madan Mohan, Krishna's leg is towards Radha Rani. Why is that?
You mean in the deities of Radha Krishna?
Yeah.
Why he's standing in such a way?
One leg is straight and the other leg is always pointing towards Srimati Radha Rani. Is there any significance for that?
Not that I know of specifically. Just that this is his tribhunga pose, threefold bending form. And I don't know the significance, nor have I read anything specifically about it ever in Prabhupada's books about, you know, one leg pointing towards Srimati Radharani. Sorry for that. If I hear anything, I'll let you know. Any last point? Yes.
I don't know if it's exactly related, but I just was reading a verse here. It's talking about the different workers and the different modes of nature, and worker in the mode of ignorance, and how they're lazy and procrastinate and are always morose, and was feeling very much like that. So I was wondering how a solution could be enacted, that even while associating with devotees and engaging in devotional service, still I find myself in the modes of nature, and even though these things are supposed to help me come out of it, I feel a little immune to their beneficial effects.
So if I understand your question correctly, you're saying that while we're practicing devotional service, sometimes we might feel affected by modes of the lower modes. And your question is how to remedy that? There's only two problems which face us in the performance of devotional service, which are mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And this is given in the positive, in that it said that devotional service must be a haituki and a pratiyata. That means unmotivated and uninterrupted in order to completely satisfy the self. So any kind of dissatisfaction that we're feeling by being affected by the modes of nature means that we've not achieved yet uninterrupted devotional service or unmotivated devotional service. And we can look to those. And therefore, we'll try to extend our exposure to devotional service as much as possible. As soon as there's a break in our devotional service and there's some place where we can become affected by the modes of material nature, or if there's some motivation for performing devotional service, just as Srila Vyasadeva, he was so advanced, but it was told to him by his spiritual master Narada Muni that you've presented something that has some kind of room for material motivation, and therefore it's not completely satisfying. Naish karmyam apya chuta varjitam shobate gyanam alam niranjanam. He said that any kind of spiritual activity that doesn't have perfect focus on unalloyed devotional service is not perfect, and it's also not completely beautiful. It's not shobhate. What to speak of material fruit of activities which are painful from the very beginning. So anyway, to make it simple, a haituki apratiyata means uninterrupted and unmotivated devotional service. So that's one thing. And the other thing is we have to have patience, because even though we've taken to devotional service and we're endeavoring, as you are, and performing, as far as I can see, unmotivated and uninterrupted devotional service, as far as I can see, still there may be agitation from the mind and senses due to momentum, because, as Prabhupada used to say, you have a fan in the wall, you decide you're not going to use it anymore, and you pull out the plug. Does the fan stop immediately? No, it continues to spin for some time. So similarly, our senses have been engaged with the modes of material nature since a time immemorial. And when we decide to take the devotional service, do they fully cooperate immediately? No, they do not. There may be some effect. In fact, some people are more affected than others. Some take the devotional service and struggle their whole life, with certain kinds of sense agitation. They struggle more than others. Some are, have a past which is cleaner and more association with the modes of goodness. Everyone's born in a different kind of mode of material nature. Some people find it much easier to control the senses. Some are very much attuned. I know devotees who, it's very easy for them to fast and do certain kinds of austerities, and other people that if you ask them to fast, they might die for that day. But it doesn't, there's no bar to devotional service. Everyone from whatever position they are at can make advancement and have to be patient. And the question usually is, like, how do we make it to the next level? And the answer always is by acting correctly in the position we're in now. We don't need to artificially try to jump ahead, because it's not possible anyway. We have to find out what our position is now and be honest and act in that position to the best of our ability and be patient. And from there, we'll make incremental advancement by the mercy of Krishna. And we've seen many, many cases of devotees, even those who have had a great hard struggle for controlling the senses, but who are very dedicated to the process. We knew some personal servants of Prabhupada who served him very faithfully but could not control their senses for the life of them, and who have since passed away. And did they get Prabhupada's mercy? Absolutely. You know, so do the best you can in the position you're in and don't expect perfection overnight. And also, even in the best of circumstances, Prabhupada mentions in the light of the Bhagavat that this lifetime is like Chaturmas. You know, Chaturmas is the 4 months when everyone sits down, performs austerities and concentrate. Not everyone, but, you know, in traditional society, Vedic society, people would stop working and perform some kind of austerity. So Prabhupada said those ascetics and students who do that, they don't realize the result of that Chaturmas austerity until they go out again. While you're in the midst of it, you really don't realize it. And then when you go out, you'll feel the power of the austerity that you perform. So he says, our lifetime is a Chaturmas-like existence. And during this entire lifetime, you're already performing devotional service. You're performing austerities, following the four regular principles, etc. He said, we will not realize the full result of that until we leave this mortal frame. Then you'll see the result. Just like he said, he wrote a letter to Giriraj Maharaj, who sent it to me after my mother died, and he said, the devotees who have parents, you won't see, or rather he said, you will see the effect of your devotional service on them when they die. And I saw it with my parents. You know, they didn't give any indication they were interested in devotional service until the very end. And then it all came to bear. Every kind of, as it was mentioned in this purport earlier about a Gyata Sukriti, sometimes through association, you're picking up a Gyata Sukriti, and then you don't realize it until the right time. And I saw it with my parents. They didn't do any, seemingly, they didn't exhibit it until the last point, and then it all came out. So devotional service can fructify at any time also and become fully manifest. But you should have faith and know that everything that you're doing is helping you to move forward, and that you will, you know, Krishna will continue to give you strength. And it's a long life. There are many periods of life that you have to go through. Some periods of life are a lot easier than others to control the senses and to be fully concentrated. When you're younger, sometimes it's harder because you have duties to do. Senses are very strong. Senses dictate and they say, hey, you know, I don't know about this. I'm not the body thing. I'm pretty strong. I mean, Shrutakirti was giving a talk once, and he said, Prabhupada used to emphasize this over and over and over again, you're not the body, not the body. But, and he said, yeah, when we were 20 years old, devotees, we'd listen to that, and we'd say, yeah, right, we're not our body. And then, you know, immediately in that body, you'd want to enjoy because the senses are so strong. So it may be more difficult at that stage of life than it is later on. But if you continue in devotional service throughout the different phases of your life and stick to devotional service no matter what the circumstances or no matter how much you think you're advancing or not advancing, you'll see that the effect will be there, definitely, because devotional service is fully potent, and you can hear that from the Shastra. In fact, the Yogendras, Kavi Yogendra says, this direct process of bhakti is so powerful that even if you run with your eyes closed, you'll never trip and fall because it's so dear to Krishna. Unlike jnana and karma, which if you make a little mistake, it's your business because you've got some personal motivation and therefore, you know, you're on your own. But with bhakti, even if you mess up, because really you're doing it for Krishna, you're doing the devotional service for Krishna, he'll cover for you. And that's stated in the verse by Karabhajana Muni, where he says, Supada mulam bhajata priyasya taktanya bhavasya hare priyasya vikarma yach chot patitam katanchid dhunoti sarvam hridi sannivishtaha. That if you're performing pure devotional service, or trying to, means you're trying to, same thing. Whether you're doing it or whether you intend to do it, it's the same. There's no difference, even if you're not there yet. It's the difference between a ripe mango and a green mango. It's mango is a mango. You're in pure devotional service. You may not have become completely ripe yet, but still you're a mango. And the verse says that if that's your intention to come to that stage, even if you do vikarma during that period of time, means you fall down, that Krishna will cover for you because he's in your heart and he knows your intention, and therefore he wipes out that reaction to the vikarma, and you'll make advancement in devotional service. So the conclusion is, devotional service is all powerful. We'll be bad at it until we get good at it, just like everything else. You have to go through anishta bhajana kriya, which means unsteady practice, before you get to nishta bhajana kriya, where you feel like you have 2 feet on the ground and those other kinds of distractions no longer bother you. You may even hear them buzzing around, but they don't bother you anymore. They won't knock you over. But you have to go through the anishta stage before you come to the nishta stage. And it's just the way it is. It's called the facts. Hare Krishna. Om Tat Sat.